this issue moving forward. I certainly want to own this issue from now to moving forward, not just my 6 years here, but moving forward, I want to be able to say this is where it started to change moving forward. And it means that on the recruitment committees, we not only advise them as to what they should think about, but we should have people of color in every single one of those committees that we, when we hire, that the people look like the people we want to invite. I think the metrics are pretty simple. Are we one of the best places to work for people of color at the university setting? I think we just have to be a little bit more intentional. I'm not saying the committee here is not intentional. I just think we have to be even more intentional about setting up specific metrics. If we really want to get somewhere, or else we won't have a roadmap.
From my perspective, it seems that, why I brought it up to begin with in the first place is that retention would be the biggest problem that we'd want to focus on. Because if there's a problem with retention, we could be bringing in 15% of the employees, and then the next year they're all gone, and we bring them in again, and the next year they're all gone, and it's not really doing anything to start that culture and that new environment to keep bringing in without ever having to make any actual, to keep being volitional about it. It'll just be a self-perpetuating system. And I think that would largely go off of retention rather than recruitment. Because if you can even bump that number up a percentage point every year, if you're retaining, then that'll build up on its own.
I think as we look to move forward, there's additional data that we want to baseline. The new board's involvement. We're going to drag Rick back into our year with us, so we all have one measuring stick. I think we'd like to look at, understand what we're doing to add people of color to our search committees, generally make them more diverse. I think we'd like to understand whether there's a recommendation from Mike's team to regionalize the searches. I think we need to understand how we're going to fund the additional cost of those searches, and I assume that, Mike, you're going to figure out a way to dole out extra dough to cover that for out of
there's
all the money that
for your
Mr. Heitz is saving for us. So we'll and then we'll get some kind of report on retention to understand how that's affecting all of this. I hope there was some in here. And then we'll...
We need to know what our goals are.
What? And then I think we're going
to
tease our goals out of the campus space.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me, this all needs to be in the dashboard.
Yeah.
And so you measure it year in and year out. And then when you revise all of your strategic plans, you push that into there as part of a strategic plan.
And the goals, as I think the availability data, I think that indicates goals that are driven from the federally generated numbers, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole different discussion. That reflects availability. Those goals may not be the university's goals, so we need to understand what are our goals.
Our goals,
I think,
are
for a starting point, those goals are articulated in the campus strategic plans, at least the one that was. So we have a goal. Whether we've accepted, endorsed,
okay,
that goal
then,
is a
then
different
we should,
issue.
Then we need to
tell us what it is.
With,
exactly.
With that.
Mr. Chairman, I think that we've had some good ideas bandied about on this issue in this discussion, and it's come from a lot of us. And my thought is that maybe our professionals, Eric and crew, could at least put together a compilation of recommendations that sort of flow from some of the ideas that have come across this table, and then we won't lose it. At least we'll have a piece of paper and perhaps can be reported on at the next meeting.
I don't say very much, but you took the words right out of my mouth.
Sorry about that. I know that's unsanitary.
But it does seem like we've got some wonderful representatives that are staying at all of the campuses and pretty much understand the environment on each of those campuses. So I think their input in this process right now could be very helpful. The tone at the top is very important. If there must be some impediment if we've got this kind of representation working in this area and we're not making progress, there must be some kind of impediment that we must better understand, because I'm sure if they were let loose to do their job, they would do their job.
Well, I think understanding that impediment is, we need to get there, as you say. Tim?
I just have a question to kind of tag along to what Dr. Easter was saying. When these jobs come open and a search is done, do the people who are, you know, on the short list for the position, do they come for an interview routinely, would you say?
It depends on the position. Normally there'd be an interview process.
Because, you know,
be an exception if you want.
You made the comment that, you know, it's wrong for somebody to presuppose somebody, we shouldn't consider this person because they're not going to fit in. I mean, if they're going to come for an interview, let them come and see the place. And I know that's just a single snapshot, but that person should be able to, you know, if they're coming for a visit, to evaluate if they think they would feel comfortable in the environment.
No, I think you've hit upon something. When we are recruiting faculty, we typically spend time showing them the local environment. We connect them to the local realtors so they can look at housing and so forth. We don't do that very deliberately with academic professionals as a category. And in this instance, it's probably not housing, but rather looking at the environment of the community to get a sense of whether or not it would be a comfortable place to live. And I think that's a good thought.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Thank you. So are we, what's that? We're getting near the end. I wish we had another three-piece that could entertain us for a few minutes, but in lieu of them, we have John Martin. So John, would you mind giving us...
Good afternoon. My name is John Martin. I'm an assistant professor of astronomy physics at the University of Illinois Springfield. And I'm here today as a member of the University Senate's conference to talk to you about the effort that goes into teaching, kind of in the continuing spirit of talking to the board about things important to faculty. The challenge for me today is really to illustrate for you the full extent of the work involved in teaching. The most visible part of teaching, which normally is what happens in the classroom, is quite literally only the tip of the iceberg. Uh-huh. I mean, for most people, reading a textbook to prepare for class is only the beginning of their learning process. What happens next in the classroom initiates the development of that declarative knowledge into full mastery. Bloom's taxonomy, shown here, illustrates the levels of cognitive development and growth that teaching is meant to encourage. At the university, we are active scholars who also engage in teaching. Now, the teacher-scholar model works because a good teacher must have mastered the subject themselves and understand how to present and develop the material. Not only does it put students in direct contact with the most current declarative knowledge, but it also gives them instruction from scholars who actively employ the same higher-order cognitive skills in their own day-to-day work. So my students actually get a lot out of stumping me with a question in class, because it gives me a chance to work through it and demonstrate for them how I, as an active scholar, would approach that problem. Now, for the most part, most of us that are over the age of 35, our college classroom experience was exclusively traditional lecture. Today, we know that static lecture has some significant drawbacks. After a traditional lecture, most students only have gained declarative knowledge with little understanding of how to apply it. Learning gains from static lecture can also vary greatly across sexes, cultures, and socioeconomic groups. Modern teaching methods, a few of which listed here, are designed to engage students, teach them higher order cognitive function, and create an unbiased learning environment. Now, one approach, there we go. An approach is to get your slides to work. One approach is to interrupt lecture and have students work collaboratively and to answer a question. This gives them an opportunity to analyze and apply their newly acquired declarative knowledge. The teacher plays the role of a facilitator rather than just a source of declarative facts. Now, this takes much more effort than a traditional lecture. It takes practice and training to do it effectively. And you must plan ahead and be prepared for the unexpected. But studies of learning outcomes show that that extra effort really is worth it. Now, good teaching also requires a mix of assessments that address the goals and objectives for the course and test the higher levels of the cognitive process. It's important to establish a clear link between scores and letter grades and the levels of achievement. This takes more time to formulate generally. Now, there's also formative assessment, which plays a key role by providing individually tailored feedback, but that can also be time-consuming. As an example, I assign lab reports in my physics labs as formative assessments. For that, I actually end up spending about an average of 30 minutes grading per student per week. So that quickly adds up to over 8 hours of grading for just a single lab section each week. Now, teaching is not confined just to the classroom. If I say office hours to you, you probably form a mental picture right away of a student sitting across the desk from a professor. Now, while that's still a prevalent method for communicating with students, email and other electronic social media have augmented it. I use online courseware called Blackboard to distribute materials, make announcements, and give short quizzes all outside of the classroom. You know, the amount of personalized interaction that a student gets can vary greatly from student to student, because generally they're the ones seeking it out. Now, I estimate that that one-to-one interaction with the average student totals about 30 to 40 minutes of my time over the course of a single semester. Now multiply that, though, then by the number of students you have in the class, and that's going to rapidly add up to something. Now, also, I want to say that to teach effectively online, all that would be conveyed in the classroom has to get conveyed via electronic media. That means that the effort to teach effectively online is equal to or more than everything I have discussed so far. The technology allows us to reach further geographically or teach asynchronously, but it does not multiply our efforts. It takes at least as much work to teach effectively online as it does to teach an equal number of students on ground. Teaching can occur absent the classroom in ways that are not always noted on a tally of teaching load. Faculty involvement in mentoring and advising plays a key role in retention of students. Advanced students benefit from tutorials and directed research. This level of interaction can be time-consuming, but it's absolutely necessary for students to develop the highest levels of cognitive mastery. And most of us, including myself, also find this level of interaction with students actually very rewarding as well. Now, it's also worth noting that just as we assess students on their progress, the faculty also critically evaluate our own efforts. Student evaluations are barometers of student attitudes. Self-assessment often occurs in the annual review process. Colleges and campuses have mechanisms in place to review degree-granting programs or oversee the general education course offerings. And programs that seek external accreditation are often reviewed, at least in part, on teaching and student learning outcomes. So the takeaway message for today is that there's a lot of behind-the-scenes work that goes into educating our students. Putting students in the same room with top scholars is just the tip, visible tip, of a large foundation of effort. And thank you for giving me the time to share with you this important part of our enterprise, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Although I know it's late and people probably want to get going. I can answer them offline too.
So, can you just explain your online teaching?
What about online teaching?
You said you use Blackboard, right?
Oh, well, I teach mostly on ground. I actually have never taught a class completely online. But I and many of my colleagues will use Blackboard actually to kind of to deliver the class in what we call a blended mode often, where the students are still meeting with us in the classroom, but then we're making the materials and, you know, short quizzes and discussion groups and other things happen asynchronously outside of the class time as well. So it's just kind of the merging of the best of both worlds, kind of ways.
And
will
you ever teach online, do you think?
Will I ever teach online? I am a one-man band at UIS right now in the astronomy and physics program.